Welcome to the Pinecast. Joining me today is Elliot of Yankee Gunner. Hello, Elliot.
Hello, Joaquin.
So it's been quite the interesting interlull. It's been a little while since the last Pinecast. We actually skipped last week with the interlullery and such and busy schedules. The transfer window is closed in the meantime, as well as a few results. I've heard some of your opinions on the transfer window so far. I listened to you on Chris's the Arsenal podcast last week, and heard how you felt. I know you feel that you like most of our signings, but yet you still feel there's a gaping hole.
Yeah. And usually I'm in favor of gaping holes, but not where our squad is concerned.
Indeed, indeed. Feel free to go X-rated here. Don't worry about the parental advisor. We have
it's so early in the day for rating. It. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay. It's the afternoon at least. We can get there.
Little afternoon delight. I'm trying to grow my interlull beard, by the way, though, but it doesn't really work on me. I haven't showered since we drew Leicester's.
Oh shit! It's slow growing. Leicester. It feels like it's been ages, right? It's already been what, almost two?
I think two and a half months, 3 months, something like that.
Approximately, they feel like eons.
Especially coming off the back of a World Cup, it's like we had enough international football. We don't need any more.
Yeah, but you know, there have been some good signs through this interlull, and a few international appearances have gone our way. We've had a couple injuries. Thankfully, they seem to be slight. You know, we have we'll get to the topic of Rambo later, but he looks like he took a knock. Ozil actually seems like he ended up getting a little bit of rest, which might have been good for us because he didn't play any matches for Germany.
Yeah, and apparently, according to the manager, he's fit, so...
Very good news for us. Very good news for us heading into a big match against City. We've had some of our striker concerns. I guess the blow has been softened a bit. You know, people have not been entirely necessarily convinced about the idea of Welbeck as our starting center forward, but he had a very assured display for England the other day, scoring a brace. Your thoughts on the Welbeck signing? Because I feel like you rate him pretty highly, don't you?
I do. I mean, I look at it this way, right? Like, is he the superstar striker, you know, finished article right now that maybe our team's crying out for? Probably not. Does he have the ability to grow into that? I mean, I think he does. He has pace. And I'm just going based on some things I've read from Man United fans on Twitter and blogs and things like that. He's got good feet. He can play those 1-2s on the edge of the area. He obviously has pace to burn. He's at an age right now where strikers just start to come into their own, and he needs to get a chance to play at center forward. And I think that the beauty of the situation right now with Giroud being injured is I think Arsene Wenger would still probably like to try Alexis at center forward somewhat. But apart from trying Alexis at center forward here and there, assuming the manager is prepared to sort of move Sanogo back now into more of a reserve role, which is really where he belongs, or even on loan would be better. Welbeck should get a lot of starts at center forward between now and the new year and really have a chance to make that job his. And are there strikers I might have wanted more than Welbeck? Of course. Were they available? Did they move? Not really. I'm not sure I would have wanted Falcao under the conditions that United got him, and certainly for the long term that wouldn't have done much for us. The upside here is Welbeck could be excellent in the short term and could prove to be the heir apparent to the striker role that we've really not had since Van Persie left.
Yeah, it's exciting times, and I heard people, I mean, there's already debate about saying, well, who plays when Giroud gets back? It's like, well, let's calm it down a little bit. Yeah. He has 3 months to play where he is first choice, okay? Let's just hope that's the argument come January, that it's not that we're not dying for Giroud to come back because Welbeck has played well in his stead.
Yeah, and you know what, Joaquin? I mean, like, here's the reality, right? Like, not everything has to be black and white. The problem is before we signed Welbeck, you had Alexis who still arguably has to learn that role. And if you're playing him every game, it's a baptism by fire early in his Arsenal career. You don't want to put that on him. You have Sanogo who doesn't look ready. You don't want to be throwing him in, week out in the big matches right now. What Welbeck does is, if Theo plays a little bit of center forward, if Alexis plays a little bit of center forward, if Welbeck plays a good chunk of center forward, you know, when Sanogo maybe plays Capital One Cup and Chuba Akpom, things like that, now the squad starts to feel more robust. And ultimately, one of those players is going to show that they can make that role theirs. I think absent Welbeck, you're either forcing Alexis into that position before he looks ready, or you're playing the Sanogo who doesn't look prepared, or you're rushing Theo back. This gives us the luxury of having a bona fide striker solution who, if we're lucky, becomes the striker for the future, and if nothing else, if at a minimum, becomes a salve to get us through the period where Sanogo's, where Giroud is out. So, you know, everybody wants to just anoint him already as he's going to be the future Thierry Henry. He doesn't have to be. For right now, the most important thing he can be is just a playable, functional striker. And what he becomes in the future, we'll find out. But for now, he's exactly what we needed, which is someone to fill that void.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that, especially on the aspect of not forcing Alexis to play centrally just quite yet, at least not week in, week out. We need to be able to throw these different looks at people. And from what we've seen from Danny, he looks like although a very mobile center forward, you know, he can play with his back to goal quite well. You know, his link-up play is quite good. And for a man his size, I mean, his first touch, and, you know, he's pretty deft around the box. And, you know, it seems like it'll fit right in with our little layoffs and quick flicks and turns and whatnot. So it's an exciting prospect. And look, to what you said, I mean, I think there's no argument to say that, you know, we're better off with him, you know, being in this position. And it's not like if it doesn't work out, you know, we can't buy another center forward next summer. Not that I'd expect us to now, but in theory.
No, we don't buy the things we need. That's our tactic. It's a cunning maneuver. We find the areas where the squad needs something, and we augment the other areas of the squad. That's what we do.
Yeah. Compensation.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm familiar with that philosophy, compensating for weakness. Yeah. Mm. Have you seen my sports car?
I will not comment on any of that.
So
we're left with Welbeck coming in, a very exciting prospect that he is, and a guy who is you know, understandably now at least making waves for what he's done for England. A lot hasn't been said too much about a few of the other signings. I mean, a lot of people talked about Callum Chambers because of his overall impact and, you know, how young he is, but it seems like Debuchy's kind of flying a little bit under the radar, which is almost like a blessing, because with defenders, usually the less you say about them, the better, in a sense. And it seems like he's kind of slotted in relatively seamlessly on the right side, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think the best thing you can say is that no one's talking about Sanya anymore. I was in the camp where I would have preferred Sanya to stay, and I think arguably Sanya's a little more reliable defensively. The one thing Debuchy does really, really well that for us is really important is wind up being the last man making a tackle, even behind the center backs. He has a knack for getting back and covering even in behind the center backs, and that's something that's important for us, especially if a Koscielny's out and you don't have his recovery pace. I think
anticipation is really clutch.
And he's great in the air, which Sanya was as well, is really important. I mean, I think, you know, obviously we'll hope to see him even be more of a contributor in the attack, which is really how he was billed ahead of the season, is someone who give us more in attack than Sanya did. But ultimately for me, I was only hoping for us to stay at par in that position, right? If you said to me that Debuchy was going to be a par with what Sanya was, I'd consider that a phenomenal signing. He's clearly not the right back of the future for this squad long term because of his age, but with Bellerin and Jenkinson on loan and Chambers, who apparently is the future at every position from defensive midfield to center back to right back, we have options. So, yeah, I love the Debuchy signing. I mean, it's tough for me because also, like, I think the one problem, though, Debuchy versus Sanya, is that Sanya was the fourth choice center back. Debuchy, there's no indication that the manager intends to use Debuchy at center back or that he could. And I certainly don't think Monreal is fourth choice center back is a par with what Sanya offered. So the only downside to Debuchy coming in is not really even his fault. It's more the manager's fault. It's that it robbed us of one center back option that we did not replace.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there. I mean, that leaves us a bit exposed. Even just in theory, just because of, like, physical build, I'd almost think you'd rather have Debuchy at center back than than a guy like Monreal, who
you'd think so, and his aerial ability, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, Monreal has said himself he doesn't feel right at center back, which I don't blame him. He just doesn't, you know, that's not his build, that's not his position, but you know, it looks like that's the way we're going right now. So obviously the issues of us being relatively threadbare at the back, because as we stand, when our first choice back four are fit, you know, it looks like there's sufficient cover, but as soon as you get stretched at all, you know, you lose one player on the left or right side or a center back, you know, we become significantly more thin. And it's a bit troubling. I mean, it's good that, you know, seeing the progress we've seen from guys like Hector Bellerin and others has been very promising, you know. And the idea, I don't know, maybe Hayden is going to be getting starts in the Capital One Cup, but has anyone seen any indication that looks like he's quite ready to step up? I mean, it's a little tough.
I've watched a very, very, very little bit of him, but I think you can always tell what the manager thinks of a player by the options he uses. And when the manager is using Nacho Monreal as an emergency center back over a young player whose primary position is center back, that to me gives you a pretty clear indication of what the manager thinks in terms of whether he's ready or not.
And we know age doesn't have anything to do with it, because he's been perfectly willing to throw 19-year-old Chambers at center back.
Well, arguably, Mikel arguably was further along in development, and by getting rid of him, it made it pretty clear what he thought. So I don't think Hayden is in the plans for, I mean, maybe Capital One Cup, but I don't think the manager sees him as a solution. I think we'd be more likely to see Monreal at center back in an emergency situation.
I'd agree with you there. So we're left with an interesting kind of selection dilemma now, because we have an abundance of riches in a lot of attacking and midfield positions, right? So we have all of our attacking center midfielders, which you can name off all 5, 7, however many of them that we have, and our all the options we have on the wings. We're left now with a position where we have to figure out what really gets into our best 11. So if you can give me something right now, give me who you think you're positionally, like when all pieces are fit, who goes into that front six?
We're
not that far away from it right now. We look, Arteta's back in the squad.
I know, but we have a strict one in, one out. Walcott's
back.
Yeah, all right.
Maybe we can hold the ship for 2 weeks, but I mean, with Walcott coming back into the squad in a couple weeks, we're going to have just about all of our options, bar Giroud, available.
Yes, until Ozil's legs both fall off in a freak gangrene accident. But okay. So here's my front six is, and let's just call it I don't like the 4-1-4-1. It hasn't been working, but we could talk strategy and tactics later when I can really display my lack of knowledge and education. But I would say Welbeck through the center with Alexis on the right, and probably Cazorla on the left. This is before Theo comes back. So like for City, for example. Cazorla, Welbeck, Alexis, with Ozil playing centrally in midfield. If Ramsey is fit, it'd be Ramsey and Arteta. If he's not, it'd be Jack and Arteta. My first choice, a little tougher. Does Alexis play on the left? I mean, do we know if that's a position he can...
He does.
All right, so then you'd go... Then it writes itself, right? It'd be Alexis, Welbeck, Theo, Ozil, Ramsey, Arteta. You know I'm a big Jack Wilshere fan. You could talk me into playing Jack over Ramsey. Very, very, very few people would agree with that. I think the argument for it is, in theory, with Welbeck, Walcott, and Alexis, we should have goals in the side. What we need are players who have the range of passing to spring them. And while I think Ramsey is better at joining up with the attack from a goal-scoring standpoint, I tend to think Wilshere actually has a better range of passing. I mean, Ramsey reminds me a little more of a Lampard type midfielder. You know, forget the comparison in terms of quality, just style wise. Whereas a Wilshere reminds me more of a Cesc, who can sit deeper, spray passes. Now, look, I mean, I realize Jack right now has some problems with his game that maybe mean he shouldn't be starting. The one thing I don't want to see is Ozil shunted out wide, especially wide left, where he himself has said you don't get the most out of him. What I suspect from listening to Wenger's press conference today when we're recording this, he said Welbeck's best position is probably central, but where it's really wherever he's needed. I wouldn't be surprised to see him deployed on either flank or just in a more fluid front three. I mean, let's face it. The roles in our attacking lineup are not set in stone. Ozil can start left and drift centrally. Cazorla can do the reverse. I think if Walcott, Alexis, and Welbeck are up front, you will see all of them taking turns playing through the middle at some point during the 90 minutes.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think the fluidity and the possibility of having that, you know, I think from here on out, right now with just Welbeck and Alexis in the first 11, which is what we're likely to see for the next few weeks before Theo's back, we played with a less conventional left-sided player, right? We haven't been going for the Podolski or the Joel Campbell or, you know, anything like that. Right. Zorla has always been a playmaker pushed out wide, even though that's where he's played the majority of his career. At Malaga, he played more centrally, but, you know, he made his name as a wing forward at the Yellow Submarine, Villarreal.
I can't
remember the name of it for a second. And so he's accustomed to playing there, but he's the kind of guy we've seen that kind of fluidity between the midfield with him and Ozil. I'm with you. Brian Gunnerfaithel was asking if we think we're going to see Ozil more centrally this weekend, and I think we will. I think we will. I just don't know if it's just a matter of like the lack of, like I'm not entirely sure whether or not the Ozil staying on the left has been more. I mean, obviously it's not of his own doing in terms of wanting to stay there, but I feel like Wenger gives him the ability to interchange, he and Santi, and I just don't know. It's whether or not they're just not clicking right. It just seems like it hasn't been coming off between the two of them, and we've seen this issue. It seemed like last season Santi had a mixed bag of a season. He didn't show us the consistent brilliance that we know he's capable.
It was a step down, step down from first season.
And the thing is, so we were hoping to see him bounce back to that first season level, and it starts to beg the question, considering his age, is it the beginning of decline a bit? Is it just fitness issues? I mean, it's kind of tough to say. So it looks like when all our cards are played, that once our first choice 11 comes in, he might be relegated to the bench, which, you know, might be for the best of the team, because certainly if it's between him and Ozil to make the 11, there's one that's kind of Ozil has to be that guy. He's the one we're banking on. He's our future.
If you buy the argument that Cesc Fabregas wasn't purchased because Mesut Ozil is that plays that role for us, which, for the record, I'm not really sure he even does. I think they're actually very different players. Then you know, and again, it's such a reductive argument, but then you have to play Ozil in center midfield and let him be a playmaker. And I also think, look, I do think Ozil is one of our best players. I don't think we've seen the best from him, but I want him involved. I want him at the heart of the attack, trying to unlock packed defenses. I think his vision and his creativity are important to us. And when he is out on the left, especially because we seem to have a right side bias to our attack a lot, our attacks seem to come down the right side a little more often, you just don't get Ozil touching the ball enough. You know, I want Ozil on the ball as much as possible. I also think it puts him in a position to start the counterattack, you know, which is something we seem to want to do more now. And so, yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think you want to see Ozil more centrally. I think the challenge is, if Welbeck makes the center back position or center forward position his own, who knows, with our injury record, he may wind up having to make the center back position his own. But if he does make the center forward position his own, and if Alexis is guaranteed one of the wide forward positions, you have an almighty battle for Oxlade-Chamberlain, Santi Cazorla, Theo Walcott, Lucas Podolski, Joel Campbell, to occupy that one remaining wide forward position. And if you're putting Ozil there, good God, you know, none of those guys get in the squad if you're, in theory, making room for Wilshere, Ramsey, and Arteta in the midfield. And it just kind of shows you how frustrating it is to have that surfeit of talent up front and still be talking about, you know, one injury away from calamity at defensive midfield or center back. So I think we're going to be fine, and ultimately as we start to click, I think we'll score goals. I do think Ozil will move back to a central position, and that Wenger put him in more of a wide position to begin with just because he had barely trained with the team at all and he wanted to ease him back into it.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. You know, because we've talked about this kind of Well, repeatedly over the years, to be honest, the fact that Wenger does whatever he can sometimes just to put the players he wants in his first 11.
Yep.
In,
yeah, he works you know, the first whether, 11 whether around or not, the players he wants, yeah.
Right, because so it's sometimes more about personnel than position. And so we've seen people played out. When, you know, there was obviously the case a couple seasons ago when he kept playing Ramsey, even though it wasn't the position he was putting him in wasn't where he should have been deployed, but he wanted to put him in, whether or not he was rightfully one of the best 11 at the time. And we've seen it with tons of players and players that have just tried to work into the side, and we feel like, you know, we've been sacrificing some things to put Wilshere and Ramsey in the same side. So obviously the debate's going to come up now with Wilshere playing kind of in the anchor position for England in their last match. Do you think he is the guy who can come in and play in the defensive midfield? Because let's be realistic right now. So with the way, even though Ramsey has not been on song so far this season, he's still contributing. He's been probably our leading goal scorer in 2014, probably.
Three goals? How many does Alexis have? Two?
Yeah, something. But you know, he's been one of our. You know, it doesn't seem like there's any chance of Ramsey being fit, being dropped anytime soon from this 11.
No, that's true. He's the first name on the team sheet right now. Yeah.
And so if he's not going to be dropped, we have to find a way, like, how is it that Wilshere gets into the team? Because I think the one, as much as it's a glaring hole that we didn't sign the defensive midfielder, there are so many midfield options that you expect Arsene to try to convert one into that. And, you know, in the sense of trying to fit someone in to fit his play, it almost seems like that position is there for Wilshere to take, because if he thinks, I mean, because what is he going to think that he's going to get in at the? I mean, I know he took the number 10 for a reason, even if because in his head he's a number 10, but he knows he's not going to play ahead of Ozil in that position, and if Ramsey is in team of the season, you know, in the Premier League team of the season type form, or at least in goal scoring or whatever, at that status, he's not going anywhere. So there's one midfield spot open. So it's almost like it's on to him to decide to reach out and grab that and take that opportunity to make that position his own.
I don't think that happens. I mean, I think if, first of all, Ramsey's not in great form. I mean, I know he has the three goals, and the minute you say he has three goals, but people are going to say, well, he has the goals. Goals are decisive. I get it, but his all-around play hasn't been great, and we have other people that should be scoring goals and need to be scoring goals besides Ramsey. I think Jack's role in the team right now will be alternating with Ramsey if Ramsey's not fit or needs to be rotated. I think Jack's role on the side will be alternating with Ozil if Ozil's not fit or needs to be rotated. I don't see him picking up one of the wide forward positions anymore because there's too much congestion in those positions. I think sometimes Wenger will play Ozil out wide to get Jack into the 10 spot, but I don't think he can do what Arteta does, not even remotely. I don't think he can do what Flamini does, which I'm still trying to figure out what that is exactly. But, I mean, I don't think Jack Wilshere is the right player to be protecting the back four in terms of his discipline, his tackling, his fitness, his skill set. I love Jack Wilshere, but I like Jack Wilshere taking the ball from deep midfield, spraying passes with his great range, beating a guy. I mean, he can do a little more of what a Rosicki does for us, right? Get past one guy in midfield, create mismatches, move players out of position. He does. I think he is our best. He and Ozil are our best passers from deep midfield, you know, in terms of their range of passing. I know that Aaron Ramsey has a high passing completion percentage, but what people forget is Cesc Fabregas never had a particularly high passing percentage at Arsenal, but he had the through balls,
He takes risks.
Right, and Wilshere does
that. You have to take risks for some of those spectacular balls they play, they have to play.
You know my problem, Joaquin? I think we have a lot of players who have the same characteristics in midfield in that Ramsey, Wilshere, Cazorla, if you want to consider him midfielder, maybe even Ozil, are at their best when they're maybe 18 to 35 yards away from the opposition goal. The further back they get, the less I think we see their qualities. They're not naturally great tacklers or defensively astute, you know, in terms of their positioning. I think Jack is the one who misses out here. And ultimately, if Arsene Wenger tries to play a Wilshere, Ramsey, Ozil midfield, if that's his plan, I'm not saying it can't work, but it is right now that does not seem to me to fit either Ramsey or Wilshere, and I think it leaves us exposed at the back, especially if our fullbacks are going to go marauding forward. You know, if we had a system where our fullbacks sat, you know, maybe then you could make an argument for it. But when the fullbacks go marauding forward and Wilshere and Ramsey are doing what comes naturally to them, I just feel bad for Koscielny and Mertesacker because they're going to get overrun.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you need someone there to anchor if that's going to be the case in terms of the movement.
You know what Arteta does really well, basically? Arteta doesn't get dispossessed. Arteta doesn't play passes that are – he has a high passing percentage. He doesn't get dispossessed. And the reason that's so important for us is if those fullbacks are marauding forward, if you press Arteta and get the ball off him, it's toast. And, right. You know, when that does happen, when Arteta gets pressed aggressively, we've always – that's always been when we've struggled – I think the problem you have with Wilshere and Ramsey is they can be dispossessed. They do want to play passes that are trickier. They do want to try an extra dribble. That's great from a certain position in the pitch, but in the Arteta position, especially the way our fullbacks play, it's a recipe for disaster.
So what do you think is what do you think is in store for Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain this season? Because if he's fit right now, I mean, he's currently not in the starting 11, but he seems to be one of the first names off the bench. I mean, you feel with Theo coming back that he might, you know, well, in terms of the hierarchy with history, he's going to be one more notch further down on the pecking order. He does have the flexibility of also playing on the left, which Theo just hasn't done for us, really. So yeah. It does give him another position, but it's starting to look like a very, very clogged position with way too many players. I mean, you'd say, although many of them, a few of them can play right side as well, we're, what, 4-5 deep at left wing?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, Joaquin, that's the challenge, right, is that Oxlade-Chamberlain is a guy who I believe if he was playing every game is on the brink of being able to make that breakout. And I almost see him potentially being a better Santi Cazorla in that they both can play, have a good eye for a pass. They both have tricky feet and can get past a guy. Ox has a little more pace and maybe a little more of an eye for goal. A lot more pace and maybe a little more eye for goal. But right now, Cazorla is more consistent, or at least in theory, and that's his position first. I think if Oxlade-Chamberlain is going to get into the side regularly, it's going to be at the expense of Cazorla. And when Theo comes back, I have no earthly idea, and my fear is it will be at the expense of Welbeck. I think that Arsene may try Alexis and Theo as sort of alternating through the middle with Ox on the wing or Cazorla on the wing, and Welbeck will be left out. You know, we can get into the whole conspiracy theory of how much did Arsene want Danny Welbeck? Did he want him on loan or not? What did he really say in his press conference? I mean, I'm inclined not to get into that, but I do think that Wenger...
Well,
all right, let me put it this way.
you don't want to delve into conspiracy theories.
I'm inclined to get into it, but I'm not sure I want the abuse and the resulting aggravation. What I think is interesting is I'm sure it crossed Wenger's mind that buying Welbeck makes it harder for him to find a path to first-team action for certain key players. And I know Oxlade-Chamberlain is a player that Arsene Wenger probably wants to get into the side. Buying Welbeck is going to make that harder when Walcott comes back. Joel Campbell is nowhere near the team now with Welbeck in the side. Yaya Sanogo, he can't justify playing Sanogo now, and I'm sure he wanted to give him a chance to open his account and really start banging in goals, if you think that's even a possibility. So I think the Welbeck thing muddies the water for a lot of players that Wenger probably had plans to use more this season, and it'll be interesting to see if Wenger just straight away puts Welbeck in at center forward and plays him game in, game out, or if he tries to still rotate in some of those players. But yeah, to your point, Oxlade-Chamberlain is a guy you would say is on the cusp, and he needs to be playing, and who's it at the expense of? And right now you could say it's at the expense of Cazorla, which maybe would be okay, but when Walcott comes back, they're both out of the team. This is why in the summer I got into arguments on Twitter with people saying, you're crazy wanting to sell Campbell or saying Campbell won't make it. Campbell's going to be awesome. Campbell. If everybody's fit, which you said earlier, so I'm going by your rules,
right.
Campbell doesn't get on the bench most games. Podolski doesn't get on the bench most games. If it's Welbeck, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Theo starting, Campbell's not even in the team. So, you know, you could almost talk me into the idea that Wenger was worried about bringing in Welbeck because of what it does for some of the other players he's trying to bring through.
Well, I think there's an entirely valid argument to the fact of, like, the late nature of Welbeck's signing was that, having lost Giroud, he could not afford to get rid of any of these other guys until Welbeck was signed. So now we're stuck with, and look, I'm happy to have the embarrassment of riches for this couple months, and they'll probably be gone in January, but maybe, you know, Campbell admitted to talks with Benfica, right? Those mm-hmm. broke down, obviously, because, you know, Arsene didn't sign Welbeck until the 25th hour. You know, Podolski was on his way out, and then Giroud got injured. So there's a good chance these players might only see very bit part, be very bit part pieces and have very few performances, and they might be out in the next window. If not in the January window, it'll be in the summer. And honestly, I mean, if they're not going to be involved and that far down our depth chart, is their happiness that important to us? I don't know that it really is. I mean, you have to be a little ruthless. As much as you like the guy, look, I like Lukas Podolski. Is he anywhere near our first 11? I don't think so. Do I like having him as an impact sub off the bench? I like having him there as an option because I'm sick of those. We've had the lean years as Arsenal fans where you look at the bench and it's, you don't have to go back that far and you see
Nick Bentner.
Four kids. well, you know, Nick Bentner, your only recognized striker, and four kids from the fucking academy from the U21 side. So, you know, I'll take it for now and I'll deal with the bruised egos.
But this is the frustrating thing, right? We're going to have guys like Podolski and Campbell who won't even make the bench. But we'll have to have a guy like Francis Coughlin and Isaac Hayden on the bench because we didn't. I mean, that's the frustrating thing to me is we had the players we bought were great, but we're one injury away from putting Isaac Hayden on the bench, and we're one injury away from Francis Coughlin being in the squad, and
would you rather have Coughlin on the bench than Flamini?
No, I think Coughlin is horrible, like genuinely horrible at football.
Really?
Like, I don't think he is a person really? Who should play football for his profession. I think he should be an artist or a paint, you know, like a baker or an accountant or a real estate agent. I don't think he should play football for a living. No. I don't like him.
Wow, that is harsh, Elliot. I don't think I've heard you. I don't think I've ever heard you condemn a player like that.
But it's just ever. he's not he's not good at football enough. Like, I don't. He's not very good at football. Now, Diaby is one of those players. See, this is the frustrating thing with a Diaby, right? Diaby has been turned into a joke, which is not fair to him because it's not through anything he did wrong. If Abu Diaby can play for us, it changes a lot of the assessment of how our midfield is composed. The problem is any plan that starts with the words, here's what we'll do with Diaby, you have to tear up because you can't rely on him. I watched the under-21 game today, and, you know, Akpom looked pretty good and Crowley looked really good, but at the end of the day, the one player who looked like he was too good for that level by some distance was Abu Diaby. But what can you say you can guarantee you're going to get from Diaby? Nothing.
Nothing, ever. Because, I mean, it's a constant joke because even as soon as they all get back and you see Abu Diaby in training pictures, you know, then the next day it's, oh, he's out of training, he has an injury again. And it's the joke continues without fail. I mean, it's fucked up, but then you say, okay, well, so maybe he's going to be in the squad and on the bench for the Man City. No, he won't be in for the Man City match, obviously, because of the shortness in terms of days, but maybe next week he'll be in the match day squad. And maybe we'll see him for 10 minutes, but then he'll be out again for another 2 months before you get another substitute appearance.
Yeah,
it's fucked up because you wish you could. Because, look, there's a reason why so many people rate Diaby so highly. There's a reason why he, at one point, was one of the first names on the France squad. You know? Mm-hmm. Like you said, you see it in this U21 game, what he's capable of, and it's just a shame. And like you said, there's a reason why we don't factor him in when we're rating any position because we cannot count on any contribution from him because of the fact that his body is broken down. And it's just a fact. Once you get all those injuries, more injuries happen. It's not the same. And unfortunate because it's stifled him.
You know what worries me too? I mean, and by the way, one other name we didn't mention in the players that have no path to first team action right now is Serge Gnabry. Like, what are we going to do with him? You know, he's a quality player who needs playing time. But here's what worries me also. Right now, Koscielny and Mertesacker are probably arguably as good or better than any center back pairing in England, okay? I'm a huge fan of both of them. And there is no denying that Callum Chambers looks like an absolute star in the making. I think it is important to remember that Callum Chambers has been playing center back for about 3 weeks, that he is a teenager who had all of one season at right back, okay, who is now like guaranteed locked in to have to play center back for us at some point this season and possibly in important games. You know, I don't want to go all doomy and say, what if he doesn't turn out to be good? You know, he looks like he's going to be good. I'm sure he'll be good. That's great. But he's a teenage center back learning the position. We saw it against Leicester where he went to ground way too early and we got off easy because they missed, you know, curled the shot wide. But, like, Chambers is going to make mistakes and probably make mistakes in bunches. When Lauren Koscielny came to Arsenal, he was arguably more experienced as a center back than Chambers by some distance, but he made a serious number of very concerning mistakes, and some people wrote him off. I'm not saying write off Chambers. What I'm saying is our hopes hinge on three center backs in the entire squad, and one of whom has been playing center back as a teenager for 3 weeks. So, you know, I just, to me, it boils down to this, right? If you said to me, all right, Elliot, gun to your head, can Arsenal win the Premier League this year? Honestly, I would say if every single player we have stayed fit the whole season, I do think we can, because I think that's a better squad than last season's squad, and last season's squad was at least in the argument. I think any long-term injury to Arteta or either Mertesacker or Koscielny, and it's a desperate scrap for fourth. And that's just unfortunate because all it would have taken is a little supplementing, you know, not, I'm not talking about $35 million players, you know, maybe a world-class defensive midfielder who has some center-back capabilities, whatever it is, but those holes, and I know I'm beating a dead horse, Joaquin, because everybody's pointed this out. I'm not saying anything revolutionary, but I would, if you said to me right now you have to sell Campbell, Gnabry, Podolski and Sanogo for one defensive midfielder, I'd make that deal in a second. Because ultimately, you know, four of those guys aren't going to play, and one of them will.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a very good point. I mean, I think there isn't really much to say other than it's negligent to go in with this little cover. And it's something that we've seen, you know, it's a storyline that just goes over and over and over again. You know, last January when you could have added a striker to push on for a title, when you made it through, because, you know, like we said, you made a very good point on the Arsenal America podcast that last season we had a team that had gelled together, had been together from the season before, started the season very well. Yeah, one bad result in the beginning aside, but this team was used to playing together, and we put that run together to Christmas. The very improbable run of nearly running the table in our fixtures and sitting top of the table come New Year's Day. And you do all that work to get there, and everything has gone perfectly with injuries and whatnot through that time. But here comes January. You know, you don't strengthen in the window. You don't add the midfielder. You don't add the striker. You have injuries to Walcott's injured, and you have guys like
Ramsey, and Ozil.
Of course, losing Ramsey and then Ozil for a little while, and like that's when the frailties come through. So even if we can somehow, you know, assimilate this squad and everyone gets clicking, which, you know, from what we see on the pitch, they're not quite there yet. We're hoping that it's coming, that it's on its way as these guys progress and learn to play with each other, but that they put it all together and that they put another, you know, spotless run together until January.
Yeah.
But then who has the faith that the business will be done in January to strengthen then? Because Arsene is the kind of the guys that my guys got me here, and then they're top of the league, so obviously they're good enough. And that's where obviously we get into some frustrations.
Well, that's the other thing that bothers me is when people will say to you, you know, well, we only have to make it through with Arteta and Flamini till January. Well, I had people telling me in January we only have to make it through with Flamini and Arteta till the summer. I mean, presuming that business will get done, as we've now seen, is not necessarily the way to go. You have to take the team on the face of who's there right now. You know, the other point is, look, we clearly have a very good team. The one thing I think, we have not played well yet. We played 5 games this season, and really, we've been bad in all 5 games. We've been pretty bad.
There's one game we look pretty good in. We look pretty good in one game, even though it's one of the tweener, doesn't really count. We look good
in
Manchester City.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to get to. I was going to say, I think this, you know, look, preseason was really short. And Mertesacker basically didn't Mertesacker didn't participate in it. Ozil didn't participate in it. Some of the players were injured who didn't participate in it. Alexis Sanchez only got part of it. I said on a preseason podcast that the key to this season is going to be for the big teams, for the Uniteds, Arsenals, Chelsea's, Cities, Liverpool's, the key is going to be surviving the first 6 to 8 weeks while you're trying to gel. And that's why someone like Chelsea has a huge advantage, because they had a fairly easy, straightforward start to the season. It makes it easier to gel. It certainly didn't help us having a Champions League qualifier during that time, because I think all the teams that sent a lot of players to the World Cup that had short preseasons were going to struggle early in the season, and we have. I don't think you're going to see Arsenal look like Arsenal, what we really can be, probably until October. Then the question is, what are we going to look like? So I'm not too alarmed by the performances, and I'm not too alarmed by the fact that we haven't looked very good going forward. I think we'll be very good. I think the Man City game is potentially very interesting, because they have not looked scintillating either. So if we can win this game, you know, it's at home, they're not looking great, they have some injuries, I think that could really be the start to giving the team some momentum to start to gel and play like they maybe can.
So let's preview this match, because obviously that they've got a couple injuries. We have a few, but we're looking like we're going to be close to, you know, relatively close to our full strength for what we have now, counting out Giroud.
Or Walcott, yeah.
Yeah. Right, and Walcott. Walcott's still out. It's going to be a tough match. I mean, it's kind of weird, because this is one of those matches that it feels a little too early in the season for it. If we really want to consider ourselves title challengers, we need to, at the very least, get a point out of. I mean, it doesn't kill our title bid if we lose to City.
No. But
will they write us off in the press? Will they write us off in every other quarter? Yeah. Does this team need the boost of at least getting a draw against Man City when at home? I think there's a fair case to be made for that. It's not a must-win game. You know, it's not a match that has to be won, but what it could do in terms of boosting our title credentials and showing a little bit is make a statement. You know, we made a nice statement on the eve of the season by beating Manchester City in the Community Shield. But then everyone's like, well, it's not a real trophy, it's a preseason. Yeah, you're right. If you ask me, would you rather beat Man City in the league or beat them in the Community Shield, I'd probably take it in the league, you know, even though the Shield is a nice little, you know, platter. Right. Mm-hmm. It's does it really matter at the end of the season? Really, you know, I get counted if you wanted the trophy, sure, but the points in the league matter more to me. And so this is a chance to make another statement. You beat City twice in the opening 2 months of the season, so to speak. I mean, it really does. It really does, because no one's questioning City's title credentials, even though, I mean, they're going to have the issue with the African Cup of Nations and whatnot. But right now, everyone's considering it a two-horse race. You know, they're saying it's City and Chelsea. But the thing is that, like, City hasn't been traditionally a big match for us. You know, it was not that long ago that Arsenal facing City was, you know, City had Sean Wright Phillips and they were losing 4-0 in half their matches. You know, like, there was a pretty shit team in the mid 2000s. You know, Manchester City were, and there isn't the prestige of the game. The thing that we've always kept reserved for Manchester United. That used to be. I remember the build up to a Manchester United match. What it used to be, and it's just like. Even though it still kept some of that aura because of history, I mean, Manchester United are nothing like what they used to be. You know, City is the team that we should be, you know, thinking about this match in that same light, because they're the real contenders this year, and we have to go out and make a statement right now as to what we can do.
Yeah, here's why I think this match becomes critical, and why losing this match could potentially have huge ramifications for our season and our title challenge. Between now and the next international break is after October 5th match day. And between now and then, we play twice every week the whole way. And we play City, and we play Dortmund, and we play Villa away, which, you know, they're playing pretty well. That's, you know, not the hardest game. Then we play a Capital One Cup tie. Then we play Tottenham. Then we're Galatasaray. Then we've got Chelsea. So it's City, Dortmund, Villa, Southampton, Spurs, Galatasaray, Chelsea. That is a really, really tough run of fixtures. It is arguably the toughest run of fixtures in our season in a cluster and with 3 days between any one game. I mean, now you could say the Capital One Cup game, there'll be heavy rotation, but he's still going to have to start one of Mertesacker or Koscielny.
Right.
So it's a really, really tough run of games. And to start it by losing to City, especially if they put several goals past us and some of the old problems from our away fixtures last year crop up, there's no letting up. There's no chance to get hot. You know, after losing to Villa last season, we got hot, and we had a run of fixtures that was relatively manageable, and that really helped our season. The odds that we're going to go max points from City, Villa away, Spurs, Chelsea, I mean, it's a tough run. So I think winning and having that confidence going into that run and starting to gel and click a little bit, it's really important because, you know, this is where having a big squad matters too. The manager is going to have to rotate. He cannot go between now and October 5th playing the same 11 guys every 3 days.
No, not possible. But by no means. And so, I mean, the good thing is we do have that depth in the attacking wings, which, to be fair, is probably the position that needs to be rotated most. I mean, with the running they do.
But what about Arteta? I mean, you know, which game do you sacrifice and say, all right, I'm going to play Flamini? Obviously, the Capital One Cup game, maybe Villa away. But, you know, for a guy Arteta's age, he's looking at playing against City, Dortmund, Villa away, maybe, Galatasaray, Spurs, and Chelsea. That's six games between now and October 5th that you, in theory, have Mikel Arteta just penciled in for playing. You know, that's the challenge. And it's tough because, you know, if you tell me Santi's going to play one game, Ox is going to play another, you know, if you tell me Ozil's going to get rested and Jack's going to play, I have faith in all those guys. But, you know, what's he going to do? Is he going to play Mertesacker and Koscielny in every one of those games? It's going to be tough.
Yeah. No, it's going to be rough considering the time and what's available. But, you know, that's why he gets paid the big bucks, right? Arsene's there
very
to make those
bucks.
Tough decisions. So very, very big bucks. But he's there to make all those big decisions. So we'll see how he handles it. Like you said, I mean, I think with this match being the first match after the transfer window is closed, you know, you have added a shiny new striker, even though he isn't the upper echelon, you know, but a very talented young striker with a lot of potential. You know, you have a huge opportunity right now to make a statement, to, you know, put a foot down, show what you're made of, give this, you know, statement of intent. Because look, if Arsenal can put together a comprehensive performance and say victory, if you can replicate something similar to what happened in the Community Shield, right? People have to take away, you know, the disclaimer of the preseason. Well, he rotated and blah blah blah. You know, all right, hey, you beat Manchester City at home. Actually, I don't give a fuck how you do it. You beat Manchester City at home, and say you beat Manchester City at home by two clear goals and dominate, like, that's a statement of intent to the rest of the league. That makes everyone stand up and listen and say, hey, these guys just beat the champions,
you know,
and they beat them convincingly. So if you can do that, what that can do, and we know the effect that can have on the squad, you know, the belief, like, we can't downplay the amount of belief it matters for them to get this result. Leading into these fixtures ahead, look, you beat the champions, and you're going into Dortmund saying, we just beat the champions of England. This Dortmund team doesn't have fucking Lewandowski anymore. You know, who the fuck are they? Like, it just helps the overall feel around everything, and it's a huge opportunity to make a big statement. That said, like, you know, it could also have the opposite effect should it all go wrong.
It's interesting.
So let's pray that doesn't happen.
We could be looking back at this period between these two international breaks as a defining period because it could position us at the top of our Champions League group, looking good to go through. It could position us near the top of the table, having made statements against City, Spurs, and Chelsea. Or it could be quite the opposite. It could be two losses from two key games in the Champions League. It could be three losses from key rivalry games in the Premier League and club in crisis. I think as far as Saturday goes,
it could even be one and the other. It could be like great in the league and terrible in Champions League or vice versa. But yeah, all right. So go on to Saturday.
Yeah, that's a good point. We always seem to find a way through in the CL. But I think as far as the City game goes, it's going to be very interesting to see how we deal with their physicality in midfield. You know, I mean, they're so powerful now. They have Fernandinho and Fernando and Yaya Toure. And, I mean, I know they're not going to use probably not going to use all of those guys at once.
So who are they missing? Who's out for them this weekend? Do you know?
I mean, is Aguero out? He seems like he's always out. I don't know. I know he had just come back from injury. Didn't Jovetic just go down with an injury?
Yeah, I think Jovetic is out.
Yeah, which is probably good because he had actually been looking pretty good for them. By and large, I think they're pretty healthy. I don't know what their back four looks like. I know
I heard rumor of Zabaleta being out, so we might see Sanya this weekend, which would make for an interesting homecoming.
Yeah, that would be interesting. But I think ultimately, I feel like there's mistakes back there for them. I feel like, you know, Kompany is not the Kompany of old. And it's just, to me, it's a question of how we handle the physicality in midfield. You know, how Ramsey and Ozil and Jack or Arteta or whoever it is deal with Yaya and Fernandinho and that power and that physicality that we really don't have. Ultimately, we need to look more dangerous in attack. We've looked really easy to stop in attack, and maybe Welbeck's energy and pace will give us that. But I think it's tough to call, but we haven't, other than the 6-3 away, I feel like we haven't really struggled with City that much at home. We've beaten them at home. We've drawn with them at home. But in the past, they haven't really come to play us. You know, they've really come and set up to defend. At least under Mancini, that's what they did. I don't know if Pellegrini will try the same thing, so I don't know really what to expect. Was it a scoreless draw against them at home last year? Or was it a 1-1?
It was a scoreless draw or a 1-1.
I think it was a scoreless draw, yeah. But I have every confidence in our ability to win that game. I just hope that, you know, that the manager gets it right, you know?
So, well, give me a score prediction. This is the Pinecast. We always make our predictions here. What? Give me a score line. What is going to happen Saturday morning?
I'll say 3-1 to the Arsenal. I think there are goals in this team. I'm terrified he's going to start Sanogo and leave Welbeck on the bench.
About the mutiny that'll be happening.
It'll be bad. But I mean, I think if he goes with Welbeck and Alexis and Ozil through the middle and Ox or Cazorla wide, I think we can really get at them and get behind their back four and cause them all kinds of problems. And I think there's always a mistake in Joe Hart. I like Arsenal 3-1. I think it'll be a more open game than some that we've seen recently.
I like it. I like the prediction. Any word on the goal scorers for Arsenal? Who do you think is going to get the goals?
Good to go that far. I will say a brace for Alexis and a debut goal for Welbeck.
I like it. I like it a lot. I'm going to go with 2-1 to the Arsenal. Yeah, I'm going to go the 2-1 to the Arsenal. I really do think we have enough to get to really put it past them, and I think we can make a statement. So, you know, hopefully that's what we see. And it'd be great to see Welbeck get on the score sheet. Huh? I think it'll actually be Alexis and Ramsey to score because that's what he does. I think he scores game-winning goals. So I'll back Rambo to do that because I do think he'll play come weekend. So
yeah, you do think so. We don't have any word on that finally, right?
No, it's just, you know, what's been said that they, you know, it's an ankle knock. And I think what Arsene said in the presser this morning was that, yeah, it's an ankle sprain, but that he has a chance. But, he's kind of, as Arsene does, he keeps his hands close to his, you know, his hand close to his chest, saying we'll know later whether or not he's ready. But he turned his ankle slightly. Knowing Ramsey, he's going to do everything he can to be fit, and I expect him to be in there and be in the mix. So we'll leave it there. Thank you so much, Elliot. You can follow him on Twitter, at Yankee Gunner. It's a pleasure as always, and hopefully we can get a delightful result from the Arsenal. So we're gonna be talking about glorious things next week, and even some glory in the Champions League. Do you have any? Do you think just quickly? Do you think we'll have enough to get past Dortmund in the midweek? I know we can't really.
Well, they won't have Royce. They won't have Immobile. I mean, they still have plenty of talent, but you know it's hard to replace a player like Royce. Those games.
I don't know that Immobile is out. By the way.
Oh,
I don't
really?
Know that he's out. Have you seen something more about it? I think it was just a knock that he took. So,
oh, okay. Well, no Royce. Definitely no Royce. Yeah.
He's their best player, so.
You know what's hard to predict, Joaquin, is like we went to Dortmund last season and got battered and somehow came away with a win. I think I think we have – that game could go either way. No idea. I think we'll be under a lot of pressure, as you always are at their stadium, but I think it's too close to call. I'll just go in and cross my fingers and hope for the best.
I'll back us to get a result there, maybe a point away at Dortmund, right. And that would be, you know, in the Champions League, it's a good result. We'll leave it there. Thank you so much. We'll be back next week, and thank you, Elliot.
Thank you. Yeah, great to talk to you.
Thank you.